Welcome to Twisted Tendrils, the podcast where we give horrific writing advice. I am your host, Laura Nash. Welcome to Twisted Tendrils, horrific writing advice. This is episode 5, Writing with the Five Senses. These are defined as sight, smell, sound, touch, and taste. We'll go over why you want to use these in your writing and some examples of how to incorporate them. If you have any further thoughts after, please send them to me on Twitter, at LauraNettles4. Now, let's get started. Reading is a conduit to the imagination. Many people visualize in their minds what they are reading, bringing it to life. I personally don't see things in my mind's eye, unfortunately, so that puts me in a predicament. If it's not on the page, I don't really fill in the gaps. Whenever I write, I must make up and put down what the character is seeing, feeling, smelling, etc., or I won't even think about it, and the character appears to be in a white room that has no effect on them. For my day job, I light visual effects for film and television. I work with the way light falls on creatures' features, highlighting the more ominous parts, hide and shadow what we don't want to reveal yet, and illuminate the point of view characters so the audience can follow them. In writing, we get to describe more than just visuals. While we describe the fall of a shard of light across the ghost's face, we can also describe the cold chill emanating from them, causing our blood to slow in our veins, even as our flight response is trying to kick in. We can describe the perfume haunting the hallway, the smell nostalgic of our passed away mother who used to roam the house years ago, the feel of damask fabric slightly catching on our fingers as we'd run our fingertips over the raised golden pattern on the heavy skirt hanging on the hallowed mannequin in the shadowed corner. The incense of sandalwood denotes this area as a shrine to the woman who used to wear it. If we want to only describe visuals, we may as well be writing what will be interpreted for a strictly visual medium. Instead, let us use all our resources available to us as writers, whose finished works are to be read in full by captivated audiences. I think we could do this a little listically, starting with number 1, the sense of smell. Scents are connected very strongly to memories and can be used to trigger them. Why else would Disney spend the money to pump delicious and memorable scents into their parks? We associate them with happy memories that get triggered every time we smell them again. I myself have candles like these scents to burn in my home, and oils to diffuse since I don't get to the parks as often as I would like, especially since the pandemic. I have the scents of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride water, a.k.a. bromine. The Haunted Mansion holiday overlay, a.k.a. gingerbread. Soarin' over orange groves, oranges. The Grand Floridian Hotel, smells like the bath shop there. And many others. Too many, some may say, but they bring me happiness. Scents can be unusual as well. Neil Gaiman gives this amazing description in American Gods. The house smelled musty and damp, and a little sweet, as if it were haunted by the ghosts of long-dead cookies. Not only are the scents listed, but then brought to life with a simile twisting the common scents with a juxtaposed, unexpected sweetness into unique and memorable descriptor. I once wrote an entire flash piece based off the prompt of show someone is abused without telling it straight out. I used the scent of a particular woman's perfume lingering in a room the main character enters. It triggers his anxiety as he recognizes it and scrambles to open the windows and air it out of his life. Here is the beginning of the story. The smell of her perfume lingers in the air. Adele's. The woman's. Its cloying scent sets my grinding teeth on edge, speeds up my breathing, and slicks my palms with sweat. The sweetness is so thick it coats my tongue, stifles my words, just as she once had. I run to the window, throwing open the curtains revealing the spectacular view of Lyon, France. My fingers slice open on the metal latches, keeping the fresh air out and memories in. I take a deep breath, trying to settle myself. The scents send my brain into a whirlpool of history I had wrestled away into the locked boxes in the darkest, deepest abysses of my mind. They had been freed by air alone, a whisper of her presence, the suspended particles, talons in my soul. Blood races from my index fingers, down my wrists and forearms to drip thickly onto the rich Parisian rugs as the latches finally uncatch. Blown glass windows open wide, letting the breeze off the Rhône River delicately run its fingers over my face. The hints of the Alps from which the river flows fills my very being with the clarity of melted glacier. Freedom. The scent isn't just described for description's sake, but has an impact on the character, interacts with them, and causes a response. I use metaphor like the Alps-scented breeze running its fingers over his face to give the scents and air a bit more life and character. Not always necessary, but can be fun to play with. The scent is the woman's calling card, a personification of her presence and impact on his life he has spent years trying to escape. The glacier scent is the personification of the opposite, freedom. Scents can be a great way to deepen the atmosphere of a setting. The decomposing smells of the foliage and the underbrush of a forest. The stench of congealed blood and rotting carcasses fallen on a battlefield, where the slain are left without proper burial, just piled up to fester. The sweet scents of sugar and molasses mixed with the more pungent cloves and cinnamon in a kitchen, as a child waits up to see if the gingerbread people will come to life tonight, like in her books. Help set the reader in the world and relate to similar situations where they have smelled the same scents in their own lives. Number 2, the sense of taste. This is one of the lesser used senses, I find, but can be very effective. Whenever I use it, it's usually to taste the brimstone or smoke in the air as a demon is summoned, or tangy blood on the tongue gurgling up from the crushed throat, but can be used for so much more. Spices you can smell so thickly you can taste it on the air. Maybe you can taste your emotions. As Sasha Black says in The Anatomy of Prose, have you ever been so angry your mouth dries and tastes poisonous? I love this idea. We've all experienced dry mouth at one point in our lives, and know the different tastes our mouths can have depending on if it's first thing in the morning, after a hot chocolate, or raw steak. The idea our mouth can taste poisonous, like our words, is a great parallel. You can go even more abstract, like Catherine M. Valenti did in Radiance. It tasted like a shade of white near blue. It tasted like the idea of pearls. It tasted like a memory nearly grasped but lost at the last moment. Here's another abstract one. Nikita Gill said, some people will always taste like fire and leave the ones that love them tasting like ash. Here's a slightly more concrete example. Dorothy Edwards wrote in My Naughty Little Sister, presently, my little sister began to wonder if the ring would taste as sparkly as it looked. It was sparklier than fizzy lemonade. So, of course, she put the ring in her mouth. And, of course, it didn't taste like lemonade at all. I think this one works wonderfully since it is from the mind of a child, and all children put things in their mouths. Very in character, in both action and thought process. I feel like taste is underutilized in a lot of writing. Most humans love the taste of good food, savor it, and want to share the experience with others. I like to nibble on things throughout the day, tasting things like sharp cheese with smooth cashews and dried cranberries. Describing pleasant taste can make the place seem homier and inviting. The cook more filled with love and caring. Unpleasant taste can signify possible terrible intentions of the one serving the food. Is it poisoned? Out of date? Does the homeowner or prison warden even care if it is? It can be a unique way to reveal characterization. Number 3. Sound. For this sense, I love to use onomatopoeia, but it's not required. Sasha Black points out, sound is a tricky little schmuck because it's so often precluded by filtering. Such a great realization. Here is a sentence with filtering. She heard a branch crack to her left. Without filtering. A branch cracked to her left. Onomatopoeia. Crack! A branch snaps to her left. From my flash piece, Skeleton Man. Without waiting for a reply, his ancient form moves, creaks, scrapes forward around the beating altar where the heart of the city is laid bare. Inch by inch, he scritches closer as my limbs grow numb. In my micro-piece, Imaginary Friend, we start with the clink of teacups between the spirit acting as an imaginary friend and her living charge she must protect. She fails, however, and we end with the clink of teacups between her and her new charge. No time to mourn the one she just lost. In my poem, The Kettle's Lament, there is a tea kettle that screams with the voices of the dead when brought to a boil. Don't describe the sounds your character doesn't deem important enough to notice. Keep it within the lens of your character. What are they hearing? How does the environment sound? Is it too quiet in the woods? Is the city roaring with racing zombies? Is there a constant, incessant drip of water in the corner of the cave you are chained in? Help us experience the world of your character and feel overwhelmed with it if the sound is getting to them, or anxious when expected sounds disappear. How are the other characters sounding to them? Can the point of view character pick up on vocal cues not explicitly obvious by the text alone? Are they barely listening because they deem the talking person not worth their time or attention, so the information trying to be laid is downgraded to murmurs in the background? You can use automatopoeia as well. Have us hear what the character does as they experience it with a word describing the sound. Bang, crack, ring, thump, thump. I use this technique a lot. Maybe a little too much, but I digress. Here's one example from my flash piece called Rust. He looked down the sight of the barrel. Humans would not go down quietly. I took a breath and aimed between my heartbeats. Thump, 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 bang, thump, thump. The bullet's aim was true. Purple blood spurted into air as the tall creature, giving slithering orders, toppled from the bed of the craft. One down. Sound doesn't always have to be diegetic either. The sound doesn't have to be from within the story's world. Rhyming schemes, alliteration, assonance, consonance, and a variety of other poetic techniques can give prose rhythm and a unique sound that has nothing to do with the actual story being told. I suggest playing around with these in micro and flash fictions as experiments to find what you like. Incorporate what's effective into your novel-length prose, but keep the other techniques in the back of your mind to pull out again when feeling stagnant or in a mood to experiment. Number 4. Touch. Don't make it creepy. Walt Disney had a concept of the 4 levels of details, as explained in The Imagineering Story. Detail level 1. You're in the country. You see over the trees some tall buildings, maybe a church steeple. Detail level 2. You've walked into town. Now you're on Main Street. Detail level 3. You're looking closely at the colors and textures of the buildings. Detail level 4. You've gone up to the front door and you're grabbing the handle, feeling the texture and temperature of the material. With this sense, we are focusing on the 4th level of detail. Texture, temperature, weight, and more. How do fabrics feel between your fingers? Is the cold door frozen in time like a glacier? Are the blistering scars on your sister's arms raised and hot? Pull us in with these details. The cool, thin edge of a blade sliding against our throat with just enough pressure for us to lightly feel it. A gentle caress of a naked finger along our back, dragging between our shoulder blades. Let us feel things how the character is perceiving them. If they think a touch is coming from an innocent, they will describe it differently than if it comes from a perceived threat, even if it's the exact same action. Color our perception with the character's lens. Here is a snippet from my flash piece, The Witch's Purge. The 5-year-old curled into her shoulder, hiccuping between sobs, wrapping his small fingers into her lilac cloak to ground himself. Her spindly fingers raked through his soft, dark hair, smearing the fallen ashes of his now-deceased mother into his baby locks. The woman holding the child describes his hair as soft and baby locks, highlighting his innocence he will not have for long once the devil comes for him. Another excerpt, this one from Pep Pill. You look at the pink and green pills in the palm of your hand. Their small weight feels deceiving. Their weight is small, yet the effect of the pills will be devastating by the end. I wanted to contrast how tiny things can compound and take our lives where we don't want them, and their physical weight before the character takes them for the first time, and thought the weighing of the options moment an appropriate place to do so. Touch can be powerful and a great place for juxtaposition. Do terrible things feel nice and sensual? Do light things have heavy consequences? Explore and get creative. Of course, just sticking to how things feel in real life is great as well, pulling the reader in by letting them imagine how things feel on their own skin. Draw connections between made-up fabrics and materials with earthly materials when you can, so we can relate. Adjectives like silky may not exist in your world if they have never manufactured silk. Keep that in mind when choosing your words. Number 5. Sight. The most common for last. What can the character see? Let's jump straight into some examples. From my micropiece, The Color of Salt. She had never noticed the color of salt before, or rather, its color-bending properties. Like blotched watercolor, only more fractal in its drawing of the tints and hues into itself, becoming whatever was around it. Invisible, except for its unnatural, uncanny qualities. A face not quite right. Eyes bleeding into the skin tones around them, then sucked back into the pinpricks of salty pupils. This piece was inspired by a watercolor description written by Jessica Ann York in the story With You, in the anthology Paranormal Contact, A Quiet Horror Confessional, from 2021. Here's her original prose. The soft colors bleed around him like salt on a watercolor painting. He is always blurry in my childhood memories, an impression of an impression. We both relate the visual distortions our main characters see to that painting technique. Finding unique ways to describe visuals can make your story more memorable and impactful. I get ideas from reading short stories and highlighting my way through them when passages stick out. I then copy them into a notebook where I have them all compiled. Don't go too abstract with your visuals, though, so the reader can't picture what you're trying to relate to them. Unless it's so aliens human can't comprehend what they're seeing. In that case, go wild. In my flash fiction, Transfigured Memory, I write about someone seeing an eldritch being. My own eyes melted and reformed, rewired, transfigured. Alien colors became visible, a miasma of beauty surrounding this unknowable creature. Ultraviolets, infrareds, and an assortment of others shimmered and bubbled, engulfing me. I was inhaling purples and exhaling radar. Here the senses are getting a little mixed up in the melting brain of our protagonist, breathing in a color wavelength and breathing out radio wavelengths outside the normal visible spectrum. The color's movements are described as shimmering and bubbling. If I wanted to go crazy with the description, I could relate it to the shimmering of after-party glitter on spilled oil, and the bubbling of melting plastics twisting, expanding, and ultimately bursting when stretched too thin, like the character's mind. But we don't want to go too overboard and slow the prose down to a dead stop. Experiment and see what amount of description you enjoy when reading your piece aloud. What pulls you in, and what slows you so down you fall out? It's a balancing act. And now, the final section, mixing it up. Most of the best descriptions utilize multiple senses. Here are some mixed examples. From my drabble, Scarecrow. Wind whips my tattered crow-pecked shirt, swirling the scents of rotten corn and spilt blood. The shrieking squeals of the now-slaughtered pigs echo through my straw-stuffed head. We've got the sound of wind whipping and shrieking pigs, the touch of crow-pecked when describing the shirt, and the scents of rotten corn and spilt blood. Three senses all mixed in there. From my flash fiction, Carbogen. She watched as Dr. Johnson started the camera to record the session, tiny red light glowing next to the lens. He approached her. The doctor's polished left shoe squeaked against the linoleum flooring. His lab coat fluttered slightly from the cool air conditioning. She wished she could fly away, use his coat as wings to flap and flutter out the third-story window behind her. We have the sight of the glowing red light on the camera, the sound of his squeaky shoe and fluttering coat, the cool feel of the AC. 3 again. From another flash piece called Lunar Child. Slowly I crept up on the baby girl in her soft embroidered dress so as not to spook her. The succulent smell from close up was intoxicating. Saliva gathered unconsciously in my mouth and dripped to the floor. Splat. Splat. I nuzzled the arm of the child. Her skin so smooth and soft, baby fat making her plump. Her shrieks of delight pierced my ears, making my hackles rise in instinct, teeth bared. Let's break it down again. Touch with the soft dress and skin, smell of the child, sound of the splattering of the drool and the baby shrieks. 3 yet again. I may have a pattern in my own writing. Anyways, experiment. See what you like. Mix it up. You can always change it during revisions, adding more if you're an underwriter, while pruning redundant or lackluster ones. And that's it for today's episode. Next week we will go over filling and refilling the creative well. How do we find inspiration? How do we help ourselves out of burnout? What do we love that we can cannibalize into our own works? All that and more next Friday. And remember, keep your writing spooky. You have been listening to Twisted Tendrils, Horrific Writing Advice by Laura Nettles.